everybody. It's springtime here in Portland, Oregon. And you know what that means? It means something terrible might happen at every moment. Just like every season and every month and week and day. Fortunately, you are tuned in to Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we, the Dirt Dog family, review movies with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb and decide whether they are hidden horror gems or slippery, slimy turds. So, instead of stressing out about the imminent economic disaster or worrying about contracting measles or getting your dick mutilated by garden tools, you can just listen to us ramble about an obscure horror movie for about an hour. That sounds pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look at the cherry blossoms while you're at it.
Yeah. My name is Cody, and I bought your toothpaste, the one with tartar control, and it made me feel like a piece of shit. This is bullshit.
All right.
I'm Buggy, and I'm trying to get my palm red, if you know what I mean.
I'm Beth, and I've been driving the Gizmobile. Also, hi, Genevieve.
Gizmobile?
Nope, the Gizmobile. Hmm. Also, hi, Genevieve.
Genevieve. First right Genevieve on. Mention.
That's three.
Never heard of her. So I ain't got nothing to talk about up top because other than Gem Hunt movies, we haven't really been watching horror movies.
Is that true?
I think Facts. So. I haven't watched
we
a horror
really
movie.
We haven't really been, we've been living a horror movie.
No, we haven't.
No, we haven't. We've been fine.
Everything's beautiful. I invested in the stock market and now I'm God. Up 30%.
He bought low.
30%.
Mutual funds.
Yeah.
No, we have instead of watching movies been spending our evenings in the old folks home, which actually isn't a horror movie. It's quite lovely.
I suppose so.
Been pretty chill.
And tomorrow night, far. I think we're going to go to Wayne's World Bingo at the Tomorrow Theater in Portland, Oregon.
Wayne's World.
That's a movie thing. Movie related.
That's true. Anybody else watch anything or do anything?
I mean, yeah, I haven't watched any horror movies, interestingly enough, either. I've just been watching The Nanny.
Oh, yeah.
That's
she has.
It.
I heard there's a new Ari Aster movie on the horizon.
I know.
Yeah. Is it supposed to be like a noir or something? Or like
I know. I don't know anything about it, but I know it's coming.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it, but I'm sure it'll be worth a watch. Okay, we have a movie we're watching tonight. It was Beth's movie that she selected based on help. What are we dicking down tonight?
Oh my God.
We're dicking it down. We're going to watch I Need You Dead, which is, well, I see here released in 2021, but I'm pretty sure it was a 2020 release.
I saw two different dates.
Yeah, I think it had a premiere and then got shelved and then actually came out in 2021 because something happened in 2020.
What?
It's true.
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Anyway.
Never heard of it.
It's called I Need You Dead.
I Need You Dead. Right. So it could have been released in 2020 or 2021. Who knows? It's out now. That's all that really matters. This was written and directed by Rocco Zevenbergen. I don't know if it's Zevenbergen or Bergen. Mm. Probably Zevenbergen. We'll figure it out. So Rocco Zevenbergen's done some work with Troma. Also attended Portland State University.
Hey,
wow.
Everyone in this room, we have a bachelor's, a master's, and a
still in school.
Matriculating.
Still in school.
Yeah, Portland State, so PSU.
We got some common alma mater here.
Mm-hmm.
This is starring Esteban Munoz as Dude with two O's.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Arlo as Pete. Ada Hurtado as Scout. Cedra Morgan Montoya as Pal. Lance Caver as Sergeant. Evelyn Gale as Mika. Rocco Zevenbergen plays himself as the director. We'll talk about that a bit later in terms of how the film unfolds. And then Lloyd Kaufman, who is the president of Troma Entertainment, has a cameo as someone named Aaron A. Appleby, who gets dissected on screen in the film.
Oh my God, that guy?
That's Lloyd Kaufman,
That's the president of Troma Entertainment, as well as a director and whatnot.
Legendary.
Yeah. So looking at the IMDb profiles for a lot of these actors, it appears that there are a lot of local musicians or artists from Portland, Oregon in this film that haven't really done much in terms of film work other than this. But Speaking of the music in the movie, there were a variety of contributions to this film, including music from director Rocco Zevenbergen and Esteban Muñez. You can find the full soundtrack online and on Spotify and shit like that. Esteban Muñez is an alternative hip-hop artist.
What? Yeah, dude is a hip-hop artist.
Yeah, who also performs under the name Chaz Matador.
Oh, I've seen that name around, I think, yeah, actually.
But he has music online under his real name as well. But he contributes to the soundtrack. There's a lot of bands and artists that are on the soundtrack. Music and stuff is pretty cool in this movie. Special effects were done by RJ Young, and the cinematography was done by Brooks Hauser. There's some kind of cool camera work in here. Mm-hmm. We might talk about that later as well. Where can you watch this cock-sucking piece of shit? It's on Amazon Prime for free, Tubi for free. It's on something called Darkroom for free that I've never heard of, but I checked it out. Looks like there's some pretty good horseshit on there, actually. Cool. So
it's like the new...
I don't know. There's a new Shudder every week.
New Shudder this week.
I feel like every time I click on something, there's like a new streaming service that's like hovering in Shudder shadows or whatever. Apple TV, you can rent it on there. Fandango, I think you can rent it on Google Play Movies and YouTube as well. Or you can buy that there DVD at your local Walmart.
Yeah, I found that when I was, because we thought maybe it was only a digital media thing. And then I was like, oh, one of these links is to purchase a DVD at Walmart.
Yeah,
that's cool. Make that money.
Hell yeah. So what's this sumbitch about?
Okay,
tell us.
Let us have it.
I'll be speaking for hours and hours.
I hope so.
So, I Need You Dead. Oh, there she goes. Here comes the cat. So, this movie starts at a house party in Portland, Oregon.
Crazy.
The main character is a lonery, gothish dude named Dude.
Dude.
The house party is awesome. There's like a mural of Garfield with big boobs. Did you see that? I want that.
I don't
that.
Think I like...
It's on the back wall when the band is playing. Actually. It's very cool. So Dude and his, there's bands playing. It's like different, you know, it's a house party. Rooms with people doing different things. Dude and his friends get offered some wild psychedelic drug called dummy gummies.
Dummy gummies.
So, of course, they take some. And then, of course, after he takes like 7 or 8, someone's like,
six.
Don't ever take more than 4 or whatever. The classic, you know, you're too fucked up kind of start to a movie. So, yeah, he gets really... fucked up, and then the cops come. One cop drinks someone's beer and then barfs, which...
Yeah, it's an epic barf.
Also, that, like, bottle gets smashed against that guy's head, too, so he's, like, kind of dying, and then also he gets barfed on.
Yeah, the cop's just like, oh, you know, whatever.
The sergeant.
Anyway, sergeant, yeah. Then there's a nice cop, who we'll meet a little later, but the nice cop tells Dude he's free to go if he doesn't drive. So, of course, Dude drives. And then before he gets in his car, he meets the creature, which comes out of a sewer. It's like a weird little mutant head that's like,
you know, it's like a tumor.
It's like a tumor. Teeth. Yeah, he puts sunglasses on it so it looks more like a face. It's like this gross meat wad.
It's kind of like a meat wad.
Kind of like a meat wad, you know. And so Dude drives. The creature's in the car with them. It's totally like obnoxious, disgusting. And it's this whole sort of like, is it the drugs? Is he having a breakdown? Or is it really happening? And then Dude gets pulled over. But luckily, it's our nice cop, who we find out is Officer Pete.
Yay!
Officer Pete is a gay, nice cop.
And he uses
Pete
baby
Buttigieg.
Powder.
He also gets nervous, so he puts baby powder on his palms. That's how he won his boyfriend over. So the creature keeps popping up. He's at Dude's apartment. So that keeps going on. The cops want to use Dude as like their informant because they're trying to like bust this like drug shit around town with these teens. So we have those two storylines. And then another storyline is interesting. And plus, it's all like, what's real? What's the drugs? What's whatever? And then another storyline is introduced, which is this meta thing where the actual director of the film plays the director of this film and then starts to have a breakdown himself. And so then, and there's like good cop, bad cop stuff. There's Dude and drugs. There's Dude and the creature. cop versus cop, I think I already said. And that's sort of like what happens in this movie.
Yeah, that's a good recap. As convoluted and kind of confusing as it gets, that's a pretty good way to sum it up.
And I didn't want to like fully, like I'm not, totally. You can't get away from the meta director thing, but I don't want to give you the whole.
Yeah, the meta director thing is almost like a spoiler in itself, yeah. But that's okay.
But it's a huge part of the movie. Yeah, so.
we're gonna dissect it. So let's see, before we get into our really pre-planned agenda items, I just wanted to mention the budget of this film really quickly, because I read that it's somewhere in the range of 25 to 30,000 is what they spent on this, which,
amazing.
Yeah, that's quite low. And on one hand, I feel like you can clearly see the low budget in the end project, but then on the other hand, it really kind of shoots for the stars in terms of what it was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So there's like, you know, some credit there in terms of like trying to really stretch your budget. But I read that as they were casting this, Rocco Zevenbergen's mantra was, we're trying to make the greatest movie ever made, which is an interesting, bold statement to make if you got, you know, less than $30,000 to make a movie. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. I also wanted to mention, you know, we've talked about Frank Henenlotter and his films Basket Case and Brain Damage on multiple episodes, but specifically in our Night Feeder episode. But I feel like those films are also kind of appropriate comparisons here, both in terms of the extreme low budget aspect of the films, as well as the story element of having like a weird little monster kind of controlling your behavior.
And some like cool effect, like
cool creature cool effects. Yeah.
As cheaply as this was made, the effects were pretty cool.
I think Basket Case was made for about $35,000, so not much more than this. So yeah, as we're critiquing this film, I did want to acknowledge that it's like a scrappy low budget feature. So obviously not everything is going to be perfect, but it doesn't mean that we can't thoughtfully critique some elements of this film.
Right, right. And what it was trying to do and what, you know, it's not all about how it was limited by its budget. It might be limited by other things or not.
Right.
The dog has a loud thing.
Yeah. Who cares?
Okay.
I don't care about anything anymore. I want to talk about drugs.
Yeah, drugs.
Drug time.
Yeah, drugs.
Hold that. I want to talk about drugs.
Heroin.
No. Not heroin.
Speed!
No, not speed.
Hashish!
No, not even hashish.
So this movie starts out, obviously, as Beth mentioned, as kind of a silly, psychedelic, slapstick party movie they get into their dummy gummies, and then it kind of goes off the rails from there. Our main character, Dude, basically has this epic drug experience, which basically is the catalyst for his problems, including the appearance of the creature, which terrorizes him during the early stages of the film. But what did you think about the drug element here? I thought it was, you know, it was obviously a key component to kick it off.
Well, I just want to say one of the quotes I read was that the house party was a vision of a scuzzy utopia, which I thought was kind of cool. It's like the kind of party everybody wants to go to, right? And most of the drugs seem pretty harmless. But yeah, the like psychedelic drugs, I don't know, seemed less harmless.
Wait, before you go, I have something to give you.
No way! Are those dummy gummies?
Dummy gummies?
Because they get you dummy high, man. Like
Floyd level high?
No, we're talking Sun Ra Life on Apollo 99 with the randomized pitch shifter extension, man. Like that fucking high.
Oh, that's the one with the backwards sitar.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, there was a lot of like weird trippy stuff. I wasn't sure like, well, I mean, the monster's obviously, like, real, technically, like, in the movie.
Is it?
But is it? Is it not? But there was some, like, pretty ominous shit before that, like, the pizza with the mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's, like, making kissing noises. I was like, that was pretty scary.
So like, is it trying to say anything about drugs, or are drugs just the vehicle?
I think it's just kind of goofy, like on purpose. Like, I think it's like over the top, because it's also like 911 is also like the police station as well, and it's just like some guy eating
a sausage
or something. Like, I don't think they're like taking it too seriously, and they're like really intensely focused on this whole like gummy situation too, like way more hyperfixated. Mm-hmm. Than like maybe they should be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know. It seems like it's a joke.
It's just a funny, you know, Portland is a particular place that's gotten a lot of shit for its drug policies over the last couple years. And I know us in this house wish that those radical new policies would have been given a chance to actually work the way they were supposed to work. And they would have worked if things were funded and it was rolled out correct. Don't get me started. But so it's interesting to see Portland filmmaker make a movie. Yeah, maybe drugs are just so like part of our culture here that it's not a pro or anti.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. I thought about that too. I think you mentioned it and I was like, oh yeah. But it doesn't really get into drugs as like a major social issue. It really does kind of just feel like a match to light the fire that kicks off the rest of the storyline, because once the drugs wear off, obviously there's the element of the cops.
The cops, though. Yeah. The cops are like trying to pursue drug crime, and they're inept and they're criminal.
They're like gonna like kill, but like also, no, this is why I like know for a fact nothing about this movie is serious or like statement making.
Sure.
It's like, they're like, okay, so when dude comes here, because dude gets set up, as we know, they're like, we're just going to kill him, basically.
Right.
Like, so obviously none of this is serious.
But
you can't just kill people for tweaking out.
You know,
out.
And we're not going to get too much into the other stuff, but I think this movie did think it was making a statement about some other things. So that's why it's like...
Well, yeah, just, yeah.
Not about drugs.
Maybe not about drugs.
I have a random drug question, which is, does anyone have a theory or any evidence-based ideas or an opinion about why people on fentanyl often have a gallon jug of milk?
I've never seen someone on fentanyl
with a gallon jug of milk.
I see it often, and we were talking about it today because I'm not the only one. You'll see someone like riding one of those little BMX bikes with a gallon jug of milk, or like fully, you know, crumpled with a gallon jug of milk. So I'm just wondering if anyone thinks it's just like that's the cheapest thing that'll sustain you.
Probably.
Or it's easy to steal.
Are we sure it's milk?
I mean, most of the time it looks like it has milk in it. Yeah. Mm. Oh, gross. What else?
Maybe. Well, you know. You know, maybe it's like fentanyl's an opioid and opioids are hard in your stomach, and like,
so
you know,
milk?
You need milk to like coat it.
Help your stomach.
Because you don't have like, you don't have enough money for actual food. So you just like chug a gallon of milk as you're taking your fentanyl.
I think that makes sense. But anyway, that's my statement about drugs. Does anyone know why there's often people, or you know what? Maybe you just get it from the food bank or like.
Could be.
Anyway, I see a lot of gallon jugs of milk abandoned and in use.
Wow.
You don't see that?
No, I have not seen.
Well, start looking because you're going to start seeing it.
Okay, I'm sure now, like.
I saw it twice today.
Huh. Yeah, now I'm never going to stop.
All right, I'm going to keep my eye out for those milk bandits.
Milk.
All right. So, yeah. So this does veer into a lot of other veers into a lot of other areas of consideration in terms of themes and values and whatnot. So I wanted to talk about the creative process a little bit, because this is a film about the creative process. At least it's a major component of the film, I'd say. So did want to talk a bit about that, because I think this is a topic that might naturally just bleed into the next topic, which is the style and the structure of the film and whatnot. So a couple interesting notes I found in one interview or in one article. The author wrote that the creature initially dismissed by dude as a druggy hallucination, the film ultimately reveals that the creature is a psychic manifestation of both his artistic inspiration and swings towards depression, which is an interesting kind of interesting thought about the creature itself. But then, you know, there's this other scene where dude has a coffee date with his love interest, where they talk about art, and she says something along the lines of, being an artist is an outdated idea.
I mean, I feel like I'm a creative person. I see outfits in my head all the time. I get super excited about colors and garments, and that brings me a lot of creative joy, but it's like, you know, is that being self-obsessed? Is that being an artist?
I don't know. Maybe it sounds really pretentious, but I just think being an artist is such an outdated idea, you know? It's so limiting. It's so exclusive. Like, if all your purpose is derived from this one act of creating, then you're only worth shit if you're being creative. And I'd rather just enjoy everything out there. But as an artist, I feel bad, I don't know, watching TV or ripping a joint by the waterfront. I think that's so fucking stupid.
Right, like calling yourself an artist. And, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting because I kind of actually identify with that sentiment a bit. Just getting older, being a past musician.
You are a musician.
No, I'm not.
Give me a break.
But like, yeah, it's at some point you start to say, what's the point? What am I actually getting out of this?
Tonight's podcast is brought to you by depression.
Yeah. Well, so is this. That's what this film is about, kind of.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Anyways, but that feeling seems to like drive the narrative throughout the second half of the film, I think. But yeah, what are your thoughts? Do you have any like connection with that idea or personal experiences with that idea or any kind of reactions to how it played out in the movie?
Everyone in this house is an artist. You're still in your like youthful artist phase. So how do you feel about it?
Like just that statement or just like
just the concept of like
Being an artist.
I mean,
the struggle.
Yeah. Like how you don't want to sell out and you want to do what you want to do. And unless you like hit the jackpot, that's really hard to do. And so then you make it a hobby or.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to like, it's unrealistic just to assume that you can make, you know, make it by just being an artist or that you're going to be like a famous artist. I think like for me, it is a hobby. And I think that's also why it isn't limiting to me. Like, I guess I kind of resonated with what she said anyway, because that's just sort of how I like move or go about making art without even thinking about it really. It's more about, like, I don't like, you know, assign myself to one particular thing.
It's very Portland-y too, I think, because I don't know, like, as I'm thinking about that, I think almost everyone, I'd say, especially for you, every adult that you've grown up around has, you know?
Yeah.
No. And not just like, I like to knit or latch hook.
Just
or
like creativity in general. Yeah. And I guess like that's kind of how I see it is regardless of like if it can be like a career exactly, it can still be like a creative outlet. And, you know, you can like do it, you can be creative every day, every motherfucking day.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, and that actually might be the point of that scene I just mentioned, sort of this idea of like, I am an artist or I just do art because...
That's what I do.
That's what I do and it feels nice, but it's not like my identity or my career or, you know, the thing that makes me a person, which I think is something that the director character in this film sort of struggles with throughout the film.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, it's like very... I mean, I guess maybe it's very any city-y where it's like, you know, someone's like, what do you do? And you're like, well, I work in a coffee shop, but I'm an artist.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where now I feel like there is kind of this adjustment, which is like, oh, I'm a cook, but I draw. You know, like I think, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, good point. And so that kind of like veers into the way that this film is structured. So as we mentioned, there's this meta element that comes into it. And I listened to a podcast interview with Rocco Zevenbergen and Esteban Munoz earlier today. And so apparently Rocco Zevenbergen's thesis for this film wasn't necessarily about creativity per se, but he said it was a commentary on the state of film, especially in the independent horror scene, where there's an undying horny lust for 80s nostalgia to a point that it's unhealthy, where it seems like every movie is just trying to redo that stuff. And he wanted to reel people in with the real, like, 80s nostalgia stuff and then slap them across the face with a conceptual weird movie that is narratively fuck you and make people rethink what they want out of their movies. What do you think about that?
I told you it was trying to say something.
Do you think that comes across in the film?
I think that's like a very ambitious goal and I like it. I like that like that statement is backing up this film too. Like after watching that, I'm like, honestly, that's super dope. I don't think it like changed what I want in films like entirely forever. But I do kind of like, I remember when I started watching it, I watched it today, which honestly was for the best because I'll actually remember like what was in it. It's fresh. But like when it started, I was like, oh, is this just going to be like another like fake? I was confused at the timeline. Like, are we in the present? Are we in the past?
Right. No, we talked about that too. And then it was like, oh, well, it's not the 80s. Or the
yeah.
90s.
And then no. Like, once things got rolling and things like started changing, I was like, well, this is more interesting in general to me now, as opposed to it being like the same as so many fucking things where it's the same movie and it has this like shitty quality intentionally, but it's not like, I don't know, doing anything different.
I mean, I am definitely someone who's commented on that getting tired of the nostalgia. We've seen some really good nostalgic horror movies lately. Like, I think I saw the TV Glow, Late Night with the Devil. I mean, those are more just like set, but they have like some, and they worked and they're good. And the one, and so I totally get that idea. And I like all the fucking remakes of movies that are so good, with the exception of the new Suspiria, because it turned out to be really good. The one thing I have to say, I mean, I think that's ambitious. It's great. But the best parts of the movie were the beginning.
The beginning was pretty awesome.
And the nostalgia stuff really worked, and the meta narrative didn't work as well. In my personal opinion, and I think, you know, way to go having a perspective and trying to say something, and I wasn't mad at it. But yeah, I get where that's coming from, though. Because we all, every time there's like a remake of something or everything, we're like, oh. Every time it's like, oh, it's, I mean, I, you know, Stranger Things, like that got tedious to me. I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. But it's like, yeah, the 80s, cool. Like, yeah, we get it. It's the 80s and therefore it's good. I don't.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this film is interesting because there's this sort of purposeful degradation of the 80s aesthetic as the film goes on and the character of the director begins to go mad.
Yeah.
And that's where we get into this kind of clever device wherein we, the viewers, are watching the film I Need You Dead, but at some point, you know, the film breaks that fourth wall and pivots to this narrative following the director and the crew and the actors as they struggle to keep the project together. And then as the mental health of the director starts to go off the rails and everything is going wrong with the film, that begins to dictate the quality of the film within the film.
Right, right.
Which so I think is very cool. It's a very cool concept, but the problem I have was that as we pivot to this, these sections of the actual production, it just feels worse than the actual movie in the movie. And that's kind of the problem that I had with it. It's just like, I felt like it kind of, it looked a bit worse. The acting was a little bit worse.
Yeah.
The writing was a little bit worse. And the concept was there. And so you're like, okay, I get what this is trying to do. But because of maybe lack of resources or whatnot, it just couldn't pull that off.
Yeah. Because, well, some of the things I saw was, you know, like, I think in the movie, within the movie, they used like a lot of, there were filters. And then like, I saw that it actually, remember when it first started, we were like, this is a weird aspect ratio. And it was 4:3. So it was like in a weird aspect ratio. So they had that shit they could fuck with. But then when it was supposed to be like the realistic parts and you can't like turn the knobs. So yeah, you're right. If they could have had, okay, name the best actor you can think of.
Ooh, I got nothing.
Give me somebody. Willem Dafoe as the director.
Oh, that's a good one.
It would have been a different movie.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Willem Dafoe as a director with whoever does like Ang Lee films as a cinematographer, right? Like it would have been a different, you know, 100 times the budget. So yeah, I don't know if I'm faulting the concept.
Yeah, I'm not faulting the concept either. I think the concept is cool, but I just think that like it maybe was too big for the resources. It's kind of like my gut instinct.
But why not? I mean, this gets into all the stuff.
Why not try it?
That we've been talking about, how I've been getting made fun of because I don't like digital video, where like it is what's the word I'm looking for? Democratizing, or, you know, where people had access to it and it's cheaper. And so therefore I should like it because it's punk rock. And the same with this, like, okay, just go with what the story is. Don't worry so much. I did see one thing about the fact that it's an hour and 47 minutes and maybe it could have been shorter than that.
True. Yeah.
And that, I think, I'm not trying to get into thoughts and feelings. That's just part of the like structure, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, another interesting component of this is the sort of fact that it's trauma adjacent.
Yeah.
The director worked for trauma, and there was some like clear sort of inspiration there from trauma films. In the interview I heard, he noted Terror Firmer as a huge influence, and this is a film where Lloyd Kaufman cast himself as a blind director, which is interesting. So I could kind of, I've never actually seen it. I've heard of it. It's been, I think it's been on my list of to watch for a million years, but I thought that was kind of an interesting reference point. And then also Zevon Bergen stated that he was struggling with depression. And as he was working on some concepts for film, he was planning to just make another sort of more trauma-inspired feature because he had done some shorts that were very sort of trauma-esque, but then decided he needed to try to break out of that and go beyond that. So I think maybe that's where this idea of like, oh, I got to do something more than just like an 80s throwback or a trauma reference or something like that. So that maybe plays into it.
Huh.
But there's some really interesting stylistic elements in this. You know, some of the effects really work. You know, there's this scene where they like do a close up as the main character's fishing around in his pocket and you see all the stuff in the pocket.
Yeah, that was
which
great.
Is like, very cool.
He's looking for his ID when the cop.
Yeah,
and it's like in there is like, you know, drugs.
A guitar.
There's like a
guitar.
Whole guitar in there.
Yeah.
You noted the like pizza face, which is a cool effect.
Yeah, pizza face.
There's
pizza
a guy that melts. There's all these interesting cartoon sound effects at the start of the film.
The creature is gross and funny, and in that, that's very, creature is very trauma.
Yeah.
Very cool. Like, it's cool.
And also very kind of basket case also.
Yeah.
Why don't you go back to that Chinese production line you came from? Calling you a critter's knockoff would be too high of an honor. You're like one of those nasty-ass ghoulies.
And there's just some in and out of, like, just camera work that's, like, trippy and, you know, real or fake or what's really happening kind of stuff. Like, the whole, like, while he's driving the car, while he's fucked up is pretty funny. Which is, you know, it's really funny to drive a car when you're fucked up.
It's my favorite thing to do.
All of us.
So, as we noted, this is a Portland-filmed film, and, you know, we were having a good, real good time pointing out the landmarks that we noticed. Is there anything you guys want to shout out that you saw that you were like, yeah, I know that place?
Clinton Street Theater with the old seats before they got the new seats.
Yeah, that was an old Clinton Street Theater.
I mean, it's only a few, but I was like, oh, those are the old chairs.
Yeah. I want to shout out Super Deluxe. I go there for lunch all the time. I think that was the Southeast Super Deluxe that they filmed at.
It's right by our house. They got them crinkle fries, the only crinkle fries I'll accept.
Yeah, veggie burger's pretty good.
Anything you noticed?
I didn't even know this was like filmed in Portland.
Oh my God.
Until like we like started this,
the
to be
Telecom
honest.
Telecom Bridge.
Yeah, so, there's like, a lot of shots of the skyline. What's that bagel place?
It's the one that's right here, but it's the original one. It's the one that's on Division.
Spielman?
Spielman, yes. Spielman Bagels.
Then there's some neighborhood they filmed in, but I didn't recognize it. I don't think it's a neighborhood that I hang out in.
Yeah. It seemed to me like cool, like our side of the bridge, Southeast, though.
Maybe.
A lot of it. But who knows? But yeah, it was Portland.
Yeah, I had a good time kind of trying to spot the landmarks as we went through the film. Okay, here's a few random notes. Rocco and Estevan, the director and main actor, met in line at a Death Grips concert in 2015.
Oh my God, Death Grips.
What a cute meet cute.
Yeah, they were both movie people that were making music as well, and so they started conversing about that.
That's pretty cute.
Ultimately became friends and then ultimately went on to make music videos together. And that all kind of culminated in this film. One music video project they did was called Mike Michael Motorcycle.
That's like your kind of project.
I know, but I haven't watched it yet. But apparently this was kind of a test run to see if they could get their cast and crew up and running to do a feature. So that it was kind of like the catalyst for this film. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then also in the interview, they asked about their favorite trauma movies. And Estevan admits that he had never seen a trauma movie.
Oh, whoa.
Other than like, there may have been one that Rocco had showed him.
Mm-hmm.
So Rocco jumps in to note that Estevan could not have been the lead in the movie if he was a diehard trauma fan, because Dude was a very complicated character that had to start off very slapstick and goofy, but then had to go to a serious place that most trauma films won't go to. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I could see that, because it is very cartoonish at the beginning.
Yeah, like,
but
it's
then
like
he has to make a
mm-hmm.
he has to make like a dark turn. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was actually a very interesting insight into how that character arc develops over the film. Okay, do you want to get into some thoughts and feelings and criticisms and constructive criticisms and shit talking and whatnot?
Yeah. I don't really want to talk shit because I'm always impressed when people do things. I know, I feel like we're all really, I just want to do the disclaimer that we're all very tired tonight. That's what I want to say. My thoughts
great.
And feelings are tired.
Cody's lit, but I guess we're tired.
Yeah, Cody's never tired. It always impresses me. Like, I could go out tomorrow and borrow $30,000, right? And make a movie. That's impressive. Like, that's an attainable amount of money. I don't think I could do this. I really liked the beginning. I thought it had some really cool ideas. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's just, though, it's not just budgets that hamper things.
No, not always.
I think the director was a really bad actor. And maybe a fantastic director.
You tell him.
That's all I have to say, though. I'm a really bad actor. I just think that is actually maybe the thing that made it the hardest sell for me, is just that guy's performance, because it was supposed to be like that was real life. And the other thing's a movie, so people could be as fucking slapstick or goofy or whatever. But I...
Yeah, I can see that.
I loved how the cops were bad and eating sausages while they were answering the phone. But there was one good cop. I don't know. Because I believe there's always one good cop. Something about spoiling the bunch. But whatever. That's my thoughts and feelings. I enjoyed watching it. It went places I didn't expect it to go. There were things with it that were critical flaws for me. But, you know, make your next movie. Do better. You're doing great, dude.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think, like, honestly, when I watched this movie, I did not, like, pick up on any of these, like, deeper concepts.
That's because we read after.
Yeah, like, I didn't. So I was just kind of like, man, this movie's pretty weird. This is pretty interesting. But I do kind of agree with what you both were saying earlier, where I like this idea a lot, and I appreciated some of the details that were put into it. Like, you can tell, like, everyone on, like, in this movie, involved with this movie, worked really hard.
Mm-hmm. And had fun, probably, too, yeah. It seemed, yeah.
And I liked the detail of as people were, like, you know, leaving the set and, like, the real world, like, that things were, degrading in the film as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, like, cool. that if it could have been, like, applied in a different setting with, like, you know, I think a better budget or at least, like, a different, like, feeling, it could be, like, actually a really effective tool or use for, like, horror movies. Like, I thought that was really cool and creative. But I do think, like, some of the concepts just kind of missed their mark for real. Like, it's not that I shouldn't, like, I was going to say I shouldn't have to, like, read something to get a movie. But at the same time, like, no, that's not true. But at the same time, I did not, like, pick up on any of that at all. Like, I didn't have, like, a sense of, like, any, like, greater message. I just kind of thought this was friends who got together and, like, made a fun movie.
Uh-huh.
That's really all I got from it.
I don't want to, like, before, I want to say one, I forget what the exact thing was. God damn it. It's, like, about money and time. I don't remember if it was when we went to see Fantasy A, Gets a Mattress, or the guy who made the Sonics documentary, but one of them, it was like, you know, the things when you make a movie are like money, time, and one other thing, and you never have all three.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that that's the thing, because it doesn't have to be money if you have the other things.
That's true.
So I don't want to be like, if it had a big, you know, it's not just that. It's like, if you, shit, do you remember what I'm talking about?
It's
like
crazy.
Money, time, and something.
Yeah.
And you rarely have
vision
all,
or something, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I can't remember the third thing.
So like,
thing.
If you have two, you can do it. But I just don't want to say it's just money. It's not just money.
It's definitely like application of right. also like the ideas for sure. It's yeah. not just like money. It's also just how it ended up working out in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And some things miss and some things hit. And I also kind of agree with like the observation. Well, I thought like it was intriguing the way they broke up the film and had it be kind of like a film within a film.
Mm-hmm.
That I did enjoy the beginning a lot more than I like, you know, gradually started to enjoy the rest of the movie. Because it also, like, I didn't expect it to sort of get so dark thematically. Like,
but then I guess enjoying the beginning would be, like, the concept of the movie. Right. As people started to leave, it did degrade. So, I mean, maybe that's...
I think, like, well, it seems like he executed what he was trying to do. Like, this director, like, successfully did, like, what he was trying to do. But it's this sort of like, did it work effectively to make a good movie, or is it a good movie? That's really like the question, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I agree with everything you guys said. I really liked this concept. I thought it was cool and it was clever, but I just didn't think it totally pulled it off effectively. And I think that was partly due to the lack of resources. But I will say that, and this will be my kind of only shit talking that I'll do. The interview I listened to, actually, I can't remember if I listened to it or if this is something I read, but Rocco Zevenbergen, you know, he reiterated this idea that the film was sort of a fuck you to the people that just wanted sort of a familiar 80s mm-hmm. nostalgia or shit. And he wanted to sort of like do that pivot to kind of like take them out of it. But at the same time, he seemed to be sort of writing off any negative reviews as being people either like offended by the device or like not being able to understand the concept that he was putting out there, which I felt like was a bit of a loophole to avoid criticism.
And so, yeah, maybe you feel the personality of the person who makes it or something.
A little bit, yeah.
Not, you know.
But then there is also that, you know, that thing that we noted earlier that it did feel a little overly long, and I felt like the end started to drag a bit. And looking at it through the lens of this being kind of a fuck you, the end dragging didn't feel purposeful to me. It just kind of felt like it was just trying to like get the material out there.
Right. Which is always the hardest part to write of any, for everyone who writes, like the hardest part is like, okay, now.
Yeah. I was also confused a little bit. I was like, wait a second.
And I'll say the acting was a little uneven, which, you know, which is always going to be the case when you're working with a limited budget. And obviously there's just like, you know, there's the trauma adjacent component
that's
of it.
That's how you're supposed to act. Yeah,
you know, it's like, that's how you're supposed to act. Exactly. But I got to say, I really enjoyed the performance of Esteban Munoz.
Yeah, he was
this dude.
Great.
I thought he was really awesome. And,
and I liked Officer Pete too.
Yeah.
Oh. He was a cutie patootie.
Yeah, there was just like, they were both, they had like that thing where even if you're not like the greatest actor, you're fun to watch.
Yeah.
And the director didn't have that. And I'm not, you know, I'm sorry, but that's
mom
just,
hates
maybe
the director.
No, I don't hate the director, but maybe she cast somebody else as the director. You know what I'm saying?
You hate him.
I don't hate him.
It's valid, but like, you can
I
just
think
say
this
that.
Movie was cool, and I've never made a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have, but...
It was fun. It was
you
worth,
have?
Yeah,
no,
but, like,
it was
they're, like,
definitely worth
long.
A watch, and I would say, like, yeah, I'm excited to see what all of these people do next, you know?
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Like, I'm definitely, like, not, like, okay, I'm writing these guys off. I'm definitely going to, like, check in and see what they're up to, because I'd like to see what they're going to do again.
So I'm not trying to actually talk shit. I just think, like, that's the thing for me. That was the thing, and I'm being honest, and that's not nice.
Being honest,
and anyone who knows me knows that I'm honest and I'm not nice.
No, you're super mean all the time.
Okay, let's do a little obscurity rating on this cocksucking thing. We got 98 IMDb votes, which is officially the lowest number of votes for any film that we've ever reviewed here. There were 11 IMDb critics, one Rotten Tomato review, and you can find this on about 7 platforms, as well as a DVD that's floating out there. All in all, on our rating scale, this is a 6.5.
Okay, okay. Yeah. It had really good, the IMDb votes, I have to say, by the way, the reviews were, it had 7 out of 10. So I'm like, this is all their friends. I'm just saying, when you only have 98,
You sound like your average IMDb commenter who is, I don't understand all of these positive reviews. Right. It must be their friends or the filmmakers.
Well, I guess this is where you find out I don't read reviews, but I do think it's like when you go to a terrible restaurant, and as a person who never Yelps, you go to the Yelp thing and you're like, wow, you know, Barf Kitchen has 3 5-star reviews. And you're like, that's your cousin. Anyway, just saying.
Yeah. Okay. Want to do the thing that we do?
I'm conflicted.
At the end of the show. Okay, here we go. We're going to count to 3 with the poop and the pee and a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, but I get that because that's what I was going to do, but I thought you were going to yell at me because you did.
No, I'm the only person who's never done it before.
Okay. For the record, we got 2 down, 1 sideways, which if you do
it's
a sideways,
allowed.
You have to round. You have to explain
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, you have to do
it. Well, then okay, one. So now I'll make it up because there were 2 downs.
You're going to make it up?
Yeah. You're going to up it?
Okay. I don't think it deserves a across the board panning.
Fair enough.
I think it's something people should watch. I wouldn't say it was my favorite gem. And I think also if you live in Portland, Oregon, you might enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a fair.
And, you know, give these people who are just starting out on their filmmaking careers a chance.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
I like their vision.
Not a turd. It's somewhere in between.
It's not a turd. And there's some really funny shit in it. The pocket thing, Garfield with tits.
Yeah.
Totally.
Love.
I want some wine before special time.
It's going to be special time right here in a second. We'll be right back.
All right, so now it's time for special time.
Special time!
All right, it's Beth's special time.
It is
tonight.
My special time!
What do we got for special time this evening?
I want to talk about the television show Pushing Daisies, which ran from 2007 to 2009 and was canceled, which was a real bummer. It is definitely horror adjacent. Featuring Jason. No, it's horror adjacent. There's some scary shit in it, actually. Like, I was going to tell my sister to watch it with her kids. I'm like, oh no, there's like some scary shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely that would not be a good idea.
So it won 7 Emmys, which who cares about that? It made TV Guide's list of 60 shows that were canceled too soon in 2013. And also, it took first place in Esquire magazine's TV Reboot Tournament in 2015. So a lot of people feel the way we feel about Pushing Daisies, which is like, bring it the fuck back. Because the main actors are still hot.
They are still hot. It's true.
Lee Grinner Pace, adorable. Recently seen in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. He's in some Hobbit shit. He's in like a Twilight or some shit. Anna Friel, who, this is funny because I finally got Cody to watch a Mike Lee movie with me and we watched Naked. And Anna Friel, her baby daddy is David Thewlis, who is the disgusting main character in Naked, which don't you think that's incredible?
Yeah. That guy's less one thoo. You know
what I mean? But
dun dun.
It's just great. So I'm just saying, watch Pushing Daisies. It's about a pie maker who could bring people back from the dead. And it's sort of like a noir thing where they investigate crimes based on the fact that he brings people back from the dead. And they can stay alive for 1 minute. He questions them and then he touches them again and they die again. But yeah, the cast, it's got Swoozy Kurtz, who is incredible. What's her face from Little Shop of Horrors? Ellen Green. Mm-hmm. Kristen Chenoweth, which, you know,
she's awesome.
She's the original Glinda in Wicked. And so there's some, Cody's always thinking I'm tricking him to watching musicals. There's a little bit of that, but not much. It's mostly just like weird, cool, beautiful, creepy.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
It's like the show funny. Aesthetic. It's clever.
Yes.
And there are some incredible cameos, which I'm not going to spoil all of them, but the one, you know, everyone watching The White Lotus, we watched one like last night that Mike White got like drowned in a vat of taffy.
Yeah, that was very horror-esque.
Yes. The murders
almost
are
like
often.
Almost like Cronenbergian.
Yeah, Cronenbergian.
For real.
Yeah, the murders are sometimes pretty fucking bizarre.
Yeah, there was that whole homage to the birds that I thought was really
cool.
Yes,
someone did get attacked by bird. Oh, that was that same episode with another great cameo. But yeah, watch Pushing Daisies. It's sort of like a horror show. Maybe one day they'll bring it back and Chuck and the Pie Man will get to make sweet love.
There's so much romance in it too. You're not talking about the romance.
There's a lot of romance.
This isn't a romance podcast.
Because Chuck...
Join me on my
man.
Romance podcast and we'll talk about the
That's
romance.
That's what you guys should do.
They're in love.
It's a great love story. But the funny other... Okay, I'm almost done. I'm taking too long with special time.
That's
but
okay.
No,
special time.
You have 1 hour left.
We've been watching Pushing Daisies as one person in this house is going through chemotherapy, so we can't touch when that's happening. And then I got fucking COVID, so we were sitting across the room from each other with our masks on watching Pushing Daisies.
How romantic.
It is, right?
Actually.
And so like when you watch the show, the two main characters are in love and they can't touch. So
and you guys are in love and you couldn't touch. It's exactly like that. You guys are chucking
like,
the pie man.
We're chucking the
pie
man.
And also we've all been eating so much pie recently.
And then we have also been eating a lot of pie because of this show, or maybe we're watching this show because of all the pie. And I bought the DVDs on eBay for $7. So there you go. Yeah. Pushing Daisies. Special time. The end.
The end.
The end.
Okay, the last thing I want to say is I think I have selected a film for our next episode, which is my episode. And I think the film that I would like to watch is a film from 2001 called The Attic Expeditions.
Okay.
Which has all the markers for a slippery, slimy turd. But maybe we'll be surprised.
Is it a found footage thing?
No, it's not. We'll see what it's all about. This was going to be my backup plan for my last episode if I couldn't get my Welcome to Arrow Beach VHS digitized.
Right.
I was going to check this one out, but I managed to pull that off. So I decided to just go with this one, and it's a movie that I have not heard about until recently. I just stumbled upon it. Sounded kind of interesting. People have mixed opinions about it, so we get to form our own opinions about it.
Nice, and I promise to be funnier next week.
Yeah, we're going to be more
funnier.
More
I promise to be more dour and more depressed.
Yeah, I promise to say Genevieve more times.
Yeah, you only said it four times, counting that one.
Yeah. How many times did I say Genevieve?
Four, five.
Who is that, by the way?
I love you, Genevieve. My friend.
Oh, you have friends?
Yeah.
Cool.
My friends always suggest the movies, and a different friend suggested this movie. But tonight I'm talking about Genevieve.
Genevieve! And
nice.
That's eight.
And Scott. Scott suggested the movie.
One Scott.
That's mentioned. I said it twice, and you said it once.
Well, thanks,
Fuck.
Y'all. Thanks for being my wife's friend.
My
wife. Your friends too.
I don't have friends.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, you crazy cats.
Colgate. Yes! I bought your Colgate toothpaste. The one with tartar control. And it made me feel like a piece of shit! This is bullshit!
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt. We'll be right back.